everybody. I'm Cindy Pearson. I'm the Executive Director of the National Women's Health Network. I'm about to give a presentation, which I received significant help from Michaela Cullen, who's not here today, but is acknowledged on this slide as one of our health interns. The National Women's Health Network is a multi-issue group, and this topic heading of how do we find honest evidence-based information and tie into reproductive justice, I'd love to talk about every aspect of that sentence. And if you saw our material on the outside hall, you see that the newsletter and the fact sheet that I left out there aren't even about breast cancer. They're about flibanserin and female sexual desire disorder, which is another rich area to talk about for evidence-based information. But I got asked to present on this panel because the network for many years led a real important effort to bring feminism, science, and gender equity to the issue of breast cancer, which as late as the 1990s was the leading killer of middle-aged women, yet had a very disproportionately low investment from the federal government compared to heart disease, which had been the leading killer of middle-aged men, which had been addressed. So for many years, we were quite active. We're based in D.C., and as the movement grew and matured and organizations like Breast Cancer Action with a social justice perspective flourished, we've backed off. So I don't usually give talks on breast cancer, except when Gina Lithcott lures me into it, and we're going to probably share some of our respectful disagreements as we get to the discussion point. But I got asked to tell, just to kind of share with this audience what's happening and has happened in D.C. with the politics of coverage for screening mammography. And again, like Saru, just emphasizing that what I'm talking about is screening mammography, not mammography for women who are already identified as high risk or for as a diagnostic tool. And like Saru, I represent an independent, not-for-profit organization with a strict policy. By choice, we accept no support from the healthcare industry, so I have no disclosures. So on to the slide, and here I'm just opening right up with the controversy. This is the homepage of a website called StopTheGuidelines.com, and it is part of an advocacy campaign in support of legislation that has been introduced in both the House and the Senate directing insurers to ignore the draft guidelines that Saru talked about and earlier guidelines, and to stick to sort of the oldest guidelines from 2002, which recommended the most frequent screening. So this is pretty out of the ordinary to have a campaign that is trying to get legislation, a law, to direct screening to be out of step with evidence-based guidelines. And it's called the Protect Access to Life Screening, Life-Saving Screenings Act. Remarkably, at this moment in D.C., when nothing is bipartisan, this is bipartisan legislation. It's sponsored in the Senate by Senators Ayotte and Mikulski, and in the House by Representatives Wasserman Schultz and Elmers. And this is sort of a tagline of what it would do to communicate simply to people who don't know the issue, but I'll explain a little bit more. This legislation's impact is on the Affordable Care Act that passed in 2010. Now, in an audience of public health folk, you all probably know that the Affordable Care Act strengthened and expanded coverage for preventative services by directing insurers who offered new plans starting in 2012 to look to guideline-setting bodies such as the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force and the CDC Committee on Immunization, and to follow to cover everything that was recommended and to cover it at no extra charge. So that means you can take someone for a vaccination without a copay. You can get a mammogram with no copay. You don't have to have met your deductible. Those are good things, right? We don't want, as public health people, when the evidence is there that a preventive screening has a benefit, we don't want deductibles and copays to stand in the way. So that's a good thing. But even the ACA singled out mammography to mandate a certain specific level of coverage that was not included in those general task force and CDC guidelines. And how did that come about? So here are a couple of unsung heroes in public health. These were the chair and vice chair of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force in 2009. It's a wonderful job. You get to just dig deep into data, and epidemiologists, weigh the evidence, the strength of the evidence. You do good for the world, and yet, if you put out a guideline that's controversial, you can have yourself subpoenaed to appear before Congress. So there they are, looking a little beaten down. And they spend a few hours of their life being roundly criticized for putting out a recommendation in November of 2009 that changed the previous recommendation of annual screening for women in their 40s to an individualized recommendation that women should make the decision based on their individual risk level. And they don't use Saru's words, but they convey something like what Saru conveyed at the end of her talk. If you are the kind of person who leaves no stone unturned, you would likely decide for mammography screening in your 40s. If you are the kind of person who doesn't want to borrow trouble and you get well informed, you might make an informed decision against mammography screening for yourself. So that, if you read it carefully, that was the text of their recommendation, but Congress wasn't going to stand for it. So how did they do it? Y'all remember that, yeah, Senator Barb, I have practically bowed down to her. I've chased after her. I've poured my love out. I live in Maryland. I vote for her. She's done a million great things for women. And she did a great thing for women in the Affordable Care Act. So that act passed with not a single Republican vote. They had party discipline to try to stop if possible, and if not stop, to position themselves as having spoken out against something that was going to be horrible. But Senator Barb managed to get bipartisan support for the Women's Health Amendment. That's where the mammography coverage language ended up. And it passed really with no controversy. In fact, it passed in 4 days. She introduced it on November 30th, and it passed 4 days later with Republican votes in favor of it. How did that happen? Well, there's the language of the law saying don't pay attention to the 2009 task force guidelines, go to the earlier one. The Women's Health Amendment had other wonderful, wonderful things in it, and we worked so hard to craft that amendment. And notice I've switched from the professional third person to the second, whatever we is, first or second person, because I was in those meetings. I was there. There were like 7, 8, 9 of us. We would meet in basement rooms in the Capitol, and we had a very specific goal, which was to make private insurance as good as Medicaid for birth control. Isn't that a wild thing to say? That private insurance should be as good as Medicaid? But the truth was that Medicaid, in law, had to cover all FDA-approved methods and no copays, no extra fees. Most women's insurance was nowhere near that good. Nowhere near. Thanks to Viagra 20 years before, there is coverage for prescription methods of birth control most of the time, but not necessarily all of them. So that was our fight. These other things came about just sort of they came along with, and wonderfully so, right? Breastfeeding, lactation support and supplies that helps women with the cost of pumps. Routine gestational diabetes screening for all pregnant women at 26 weeks. HIV screening and counseling. These are true advances, and when they went into effect with new plans that started August 1, 2012, we cheered. But that's where the mammography recommendation came in too. And so, you know, I think it's very, very likely that the success that Senator Barb and had in 2009 in getting a mandate for extra coverage of mammography beyond what the guidelines recommend, I think it's very likely that will pass and will continue. And what I want to share with you is I think that while I might say, what is Congress doing telling, you know, these great public health folks, you know, we want to ignore your guidelines, and Congress shouldn't get involved in science, right? Congress, they aren't scientists. That's often something we say in D.C. What are they doing, trying to play scientists? But there's more to the story, and I just want to run through that quickly. So 1988, some good movies came out. It was also the first year that Medicare covered a screening test. So this is an audience that probably has different, you know, frames of reference for what Medicare does and doesn't cover, but for the first 25 years of its existence, it did not cover preventive care. And mammography was the first thing it covered, and that was at the direct request of activists. And then the breast cancer movement really started to grow. I could have a slide full of wonderful activist actions that happened in 1990, 91, 92. I just grabbed the Susan Love breast cancer book as one example. But Congress responded, and they passed the Breast and Cervical Cancer Mortality Prevention Act, which created funding for a program administered by the CDC that offered women screening. Now, Congress, displaying a little of their lack of science training, called it a Mortality Prevention Act. Mammography doesn't prevent anything if you don't get treatment afterwards. So in 2000, full 10 years later, at the, you know, at the vision, the creation, the writing, and the championing by activists, Congress passed an amendment, or another piece of legislation that added treatment to that bill. So even before the ACA passed, if women were lucky enough to get their screening through the CDC program and unlucky enough to get a diagnosis, they could get their treatment funded even if they had no other way to qualify for coverage, Medicaid or private insurance. So, I'll go back. We've been messing with Congress for a long time. You know, since at least 1988, we've been telling them, respond to us as women, as on a women's health need, and, you know, make the healthcare system accountable to us. And now it's sort of tough to go in and say, oh, but, you know, maybe this isn't an area where you should tread. Some of us do say, I will say, if someone asks me, I say, I don't agree with StopTheGuidelines.com, but I have not gone to Congress. I have not tried to grab Senator Barb and talk her out of it. I do know there are organizations, public health and consumer safety, and, you know, some organizations that have let it be known that they don't agree with this. But here's the list of cancer-related organizations that do support this effort, including, you know, right in the center, the Black Women's Health Imperative, which is the leading voice for African-American women who, as we all know, were not included in those randomized controlled trials done in Sweden and Canada and in New York in the 1960s. So it's, I agree with Saru that in an effort to get to evidence-based information, evidence-based care, and health justice, that we need to look beyond mammography, that our efforts as health justice activists need to be about the questions that Saru put up. how do we prevent breast cancer in the first place? How do we treat it more effectively, less toxically? And I would add a couple more from an organization that's not here today, the National Breast Cancer Coalition, agreeing with Breast Cancer Action about finding the preventable causes of breast cancer and then finding out how to prevent metastasis. That's the kind of work that needs to be done, and in some ways the repeated continual focus on mammography gets in the way of the understanding that mammography, no matter how much we pay for it, won't save enough lives, as many as need to be saved. So you can see I'm privileging the organizations that do this work full time. When I say for more information, I'll give you the National Women's Health Network contact information on the next slide, but Breast Cancer Action, National Breast Cancer Coalition are the organizations who are grappling with mammography from a human perspective, the needs of women right now, an individual perspective for information for making informed decision, and a justice perspective for having a more profound response to the epidemic. And for more about the network and what else we do, the National Women's Health Network, nwhn.org. So many thanks, and now I have to switch from being a speaker to being a moderator again.